Justice, you've come to the right place. This is News for the Rest of Us, free of corporate influence. This week on Rabble Radio, we're sharing a clip from our most recent Courage My Friends podcast series episode, hosted on Needs No Introduction. In this episode, host Resh Badu sits down with professor and researcher Dr. Chandani Desai and professor, author, and policy analyst Dr. Mohanad Ayash. The three discuss the destruction of Gaza's educational systems and the role of scholasticide within genocide. Dr. Mohanad Ayash is a professor of sociology at Mount Royal University. He's the analyst at Al-Shabaka, the Palestinian Policy Network. He is also an author and writer. Dr. Chandani Desai is an assistant professor in the Critical Studies of Equity and Solidarity at the University of Toronto. She is working on her first book, Revolutionary Circuits of Liberation, The Radical Tradition of Palestinian Resistance, Culture, and Internationalism. She also has a pedagogy podcast. Here are Drs. Ayash and Desai with Resh Badu. Take a listen.
What happens when states seek to destroy the mind and memory of a people? Is scholasticide, the destruction of educational systems, its teachers and learners, intrinsic to genocide? And what is the role and responsibility of global educational solidarity in standing against it? I'm your host, Resh Badu. Discussing the months-long Israeli military onslaught waged on Palestinians, we focus on scholasticide, the destruction of Gaza's educational systems, infrastructure, educators, and students, and the growing and global pro-Palestinian solidarity movement spanning continents, communities, sectors, and university and college campuses around the world, including here in Canada. Here now is my conversation with Mohanad Ayash and Chandani Desai. Chandani joins us from the pro-Palestinian encampment at the University of Toronto. Chandani and Mohanad, welcome. Thanks for joining us. Chandani, you have been traveling to the occupied Palestinian territories over the years for your research. So could you tell us a bit about your work?
Yeah, I am a scholar of Palestine studies. I'm working on a book on the history of the Palestinian Revolution's cultural institutions and third world internationalism and its formation. And so part of my research means that I have to travel extensively to interview the generation of the 60s and 70s and 80s, those that were alive in that period, especially the cultural producers of that period. And so my research has taken me specifically to Palestine, but also the region. So Lebanon, Egypt, and places in Europe where many of the PLO's cadres may have been displaced in exile too. There's a lot more. I teach on settler colonialism, capitalism, and race, but I'll leave it at that for this focus of my research and work.
Lovely. And we'll be getting to some of those themes a little bit later on in the conversation as well. Mohanad, you are a professor of sociology at Mount Royal University in Calgary and have also focused a great deal of your work on Palestine. So could you tell us more about your focus?
Yeah, thanks for having me and for having this important conversation, first of all. I was born and raised in Palestine. I grew up the first 14 years of my life under Israeli settler colonial occupation. So it's a lived experience for me. This is not just some research that I do because it's interesting or anything like that. It's my life and the life of everyone around me. I'm generally a social theorist. I do some work on political violence, work on sovereignty. What does decolonization mean? What does it look like? I examine social movements for decolonial liberation in Palestine. So that's the general description of my work and what it involves. And I do have public writing, opinion pieces, commentaries. I write for Al Jazeera, Mondo Weiss, a couple of pieces for The Breach. I've talked about anti-Palestinian racism, how we might make sense of Israeli settler colonialism, and what does decolonization in Palestine look like. That sort of captures the general gist of my work.
Thank you. Now, we're talking about scholasticide, and it makes sense to define the terminology first. So, Chandani, what is scholasticide?
Scholasticide is the systemic destruction of the Palestinian education system, which has been ongoing since the 1948 Nakba. It intensified in the 1967 June War and definitely has intensified more and more across the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem. But in this genocide that we're seeing, what we are witnessing is not just systematic destruction. We are seeing a complete annihilation of the education system in Gaza. The term scholasticide was first coined by the Oxford professor Carmen Ebolsi, and in it, she really tries to talk about the multi-scale layers of the kind of destruction we see. And in the last 8 months, specifically as we are witnessing this horrible genocide, Scholars Against the War and Dr. Abdulrazak Takriti and myself have broadened the definition to include a lot more than what was included in Professor Nabulsi's definition. And we've created a toolkit, which is on the Scholars Against the War on Palestine's website, which actually describes much more in depth and length about what that definition is.
Let's get into the specifics. Mohamed, help us to grasp the scale of this scholastic destruction in Gaza over the last 8 months.
So number one thing that people should understand is that the destruction is deliberate. I don't need the International Court of Justice to rule in that way for me to say that. It is clearly a deliberate destruction of Palestinian knowledge producing institutions, Palestinian research, Palestinian lives of educators, of students, of administrators, destruction of buildings. You can see it all. These are not just collateral damage. This is a deliberate attempt to annihilate Palestinian society. That is what genocide is. It's an attempt to annihilate a people, not just physically, but to annihilate them as historical beings, as political beings, as cultural beings. So it's part of the genocidal attack against the Palestinian people that the Palestinian people have been facing for over 75 years, in fact, prior to the establishment of the Israeli state. Zionist settler colonialism sought to erase Palestinians as a people and erase them from the land, but erase them from history, from public discourse, from politics. They don't want something called a Palestinian people claiming their rightful sovereignty over the land. So that is a big part of what is happening here. And in this latest genocidal operation, we see the intensification of that structure of genocide. So again, the structure of genocide is not new. It's been around for over 75 years, and it appears in different forms. Over the last seven or so months, we're witnessing it in a very intensified form, where we've seen the destruction of pretty much all of the Palestinian universities in the Gaza Strip, where we've seen the murder, deliberate murder of professors, of university presidents, of students. We see it as well in the West Bank, where students at Bir Zeit University, professors are constantly targeted, arrested, shot, university closures, you name it. So people have to understand that this is part of this larger attack against the Palestinian people by the Zionist settler colonial project.
And a part of the larger project of epistemicide, the decimation of all knowledge systems of both mind and memory, educational, but also cultural. Chandani, do you want to add to this in terms of the types of educational, but also cultural destruction that we're seeing?
Yes, absolutely. I'm going to go back to a little bit of what Mohamed first said, and then move to the cultural question that you're asking. But as Mohamed has said, every single university in Gaza has been bombed. When we think about the scale of the scholasticide, to think of every single university completely desecrated and gone, what does that mean for the education of Gaza's future youth and children? So that's first and foremost. We've seen the killing and targeted assassinations of university professors, including deans, president of the Islamic University of Gaza, and also the targeted killing of teachers. We also then see the killing of students, right? And the numbers are over 5,000 for students, over 100 for professors. As Mohamed mentioned, right, we're also seeing arrests and detentions across the West Bank. So we're seeing that in Gaza already, but we're also seeing that consistently happen on the campuses. The campuses are raided, specifically Bérezét University, and many of its student council leaders have been arrested and held under administrative detention. And this is deeply concerning because, again, what does this mean for the right to education of Palestinian students? Because also when they're in Israeli prisons, they're denied the right to education inside those prisons. You have the destruction and looting of research and teaching resources, including libraries, archives, laboratories, and facilities that support the educational process. Speaking of archives and libraries, I mean, this really connects to the cultural question that you're asking, right? Because what we have seen in this moment is a desecration of mosques, cultural heritage sites, churches. You see the destruction of major, major archives that hold immense amounts of Palestinian knowledge, both in terms of Islamic knowledge, but also in terms of the central archives of Gaza, which hold a lot of information on the functioning of Gaza itself, the municipality archives. This destruction of culture, as Mohanad mentioned, it is part of the systematic genocide, right? It's not just this side killing of knowledge or killing of cultural heritage and killing of cultural artifacts. A lot of this destruction is precisely about attacking the Palestinian identity. It's about attacking the Palestinian presence on the land. And a lot of the cultural artifacts and heritage sites and buildings and libraries and archives, they are really a testament to the long history of Palestinian existence on the land of Palestine. And so part of the targeting of all of this rich history is to essentially try to say that nothing existed here before. And we've seen this kind of rhetoric in Israeli discourse around, you know, this was a land without a people, which we know is not true, but certainly erasing Palestinian cultural heritage and historical material and historical sites are part of this ongoing project. Again, this is not new to this current moment. Of course, it is intensified on a level and scale we've never seen before. But what we certainly have seen is this in different moments in history. 1948, we saw a similar kind of desecration of villages and different kind of landmarks and cultural sites. We saw that in the 1982 Israeli invasion of Lebanon when PLO infrastructure was destroyed and the Palestine Research Center was deliberately attacked and targeted and the entire PLO's archives were looted and massive amounts of books were stolen. So when we think about this destruction, we always have to also situate it within the 75 history that Mohanad mentioned, because it's an ongoing project of erasure. There's much more around the scholasticide that also includes the obstruction of creating new educational structures. So for example, let's say the genocide were to stop and Palestinians were to start to rebuild. Because of the Israeli occupation, you have this complete denial of specific kinds of resources that enable Palestinians to build. Under siege, this kind of building is not possible. And so when this genocide ends, we also need to make sure that the siege of Gaza ends, because there can't be any kind of rebuilding. The other thing I wanted to mention in this specific genocide, what we also see is the use of schools and libraries and universities as military barracks. Just this morning, I saw footage of Israeli soldiers in the Azhar University walking around the rubble, essentially mocking the scholasticide, suggesting that, you know, there will be no new semester here ever again. Mm-hmm. And I say this because in these institutions, you see Israeli occupation forces having their artillery being stored, and they continue to use these facilities also to torture and detain Palestinians right now in this genocidal war. And so we're seeing the scholasticide expand in much more horrific and horrifying ways beyond just the invasion and destruction of educational institutions, but we're also seeing the ways in which institutions are also being used as weapons in this genocidal war.
And as you say, this is a pattern, and Nabulsi had also pointed this out, this is a pattern that goes back to 1948, the time of the original displacement of Palestinians known as the Nakba, the catastrophe. And just to say that this episode will air on May 15th, which is the 76th anniversary, Nakba Day. And this destruction, I mean, the destruction is horrendous, but you also have, as you said, the delegitimization of knowledge and knowledge systems, and also defunding. The early defunding of UNRWA was part of this as well, which is the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine. Mohanad, did you want to speak about the role of UNRWA within Palestinian education?
Yeah, they play a very important role educating Palestinian children. Those schools are very popular among the Palestinian refugees. And it's important to emphasize that we are talking about Palestinian refugees. So the overwhelming majority of the Palestinian people inside the Gaza Strip are refugees. They're refugees from 1948. And they have been yearning to return to their actual homelands and homes in other parts of Palestine that became Israel in 1948 as a result of Israeli settler colonial conquest. So those refugees are entirely dependent on UNRWA to get a good education, to get health care, and get other social services that they otherwise would not have access to. And the Israelis have been wanting to destroy UNRWA for a very long time for a few reasons. One is that they want to destroy the Palestinian right of return. As far as the Israelis are concerned, the Palestinians do not have the right to return to the lands from which they were expelled in 1948. And the presence of UNRWA is a continuous reminder that the Palestinians have that right. So these efforts that we see recently to defund UNRWA are not new. The demonization of UNRWA are not new. This is part of a long-term strategy for the Israeli state to eliminate UNRWA and, most importantly, to eliminate the Palestinian right of return. Now, Palestinians, especially Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, are in fact some of the most educated refugee populations in the world.
Well, I was going to ask about that because in 2023, they were at 97.7% literacy rate, advanced degrees. And as you said, they're at the same time one of the world's largest refugee populations. So what does education mean for the Palestinian people?
It means a lot. Palestinians take a lot of pride in their education, in seeking higher education, in building themselves up through their education. It's part of the Palestinian culture, a very important part of Palestinian culture to get a good education. Every parent sees that as their number one job for their children. No matter how poor they are, they see it as integral that they get their kids good education. There's a cultural, societal emphasis on education within Palestinian society. So people take it very seriously and take great pride in their education levels. And they also see it critically as part of the struggle for liberation. So Palestinians understand very well that education is part of their struggle for liberation. So they see it as part of their duty to the national cause, to their fellow Palestinians, to advance themselves through education and help the collective get a little closer to that moment of liberation. That's how education is viewed. And that's why Israel wants to destroy it, because they want to destroy the Palestinians' will to resist, the Palestinians' will to exist as a Palestinian, to insist the right of Palestinians to exist as political subjects, as a collectivity with sovereign rights to the land. So you always have to understand these efforts of the Israeli state within that context. Again, I go back to this and I will continue to stress it. It is part of the Israeli settler colonial project of trying to annihilate the existence of the Palestinian people. That doesn't just happen physically. It happens also culturally, politically, erase Palestinians from history and so on. So yeah, it's a very critical part of Palestinian culture and it will remain so. These efforts will not ultimately succeed. Yes, the challenges Palestinians are going to face and continue to face today are enormous, and they're getting bigger by the day. But Palestinians will insist on their existence. The will to resist will not be broken, and education will continue to play a critical role in Palestinian resistance for years to come.
Indeed. And Chandani, you have, as you said, been writing about Palestinians' culture of resistance. Did you want to add to what Mohanad is saying about the centrality of education to Palestinian identity and resilience?
I think Mohanad really beautifully captured everything, especially the point on the centrality of education for liberation, because when a people have lost everything, including the land, and as Mohanad said, much of the Palestinian population have become refugees. And so in the absence of access to the homeland, education has become a really important pillar, not just in terms of preserving a national identity across fragmented borders and fragmented geographies, but also as a central pillar of knowledge that gets passed on in various ways that contribute to the cause for liberation. I just want to emphasize that point in that the loss of land has meant that education becomes an important pillar in the fight to return to that land and to have liberatory visions and ideas in ways that enable that to be continued across generations and not to be stifled. And during the period of the late 1960s, 70s, and 80s, you had a really strong use of education in the struggle for liberation. And it continues today as well. But in that period, you had all kinds of different forms of knowledge production that came from the Palestinian Revolution that was imparted both to children, to used in much of the curricula of Palestinian education. Today, we do see in the post-Oslo period much shifts around what is possible and what isn't. You always have Israel that is trying to intervene in what can be taught and what is possible. But ultimately, for Palestinians, whether that education is happening in a formal classroom or it's happening in the home, liberation has been a central aspect of education. And I just want to add one last piece and emphasize again what Mohamed has said around the attack on UNRWA. It is precisely to eliminate the Palestinian right of return, creating this kind of frenzy around false allegations that UNRWA was somehow involved in October 7th, the Al-Aqsa operation. One of the aspects around delegitimization has been to try to defund the right of return, because ultimately this right belongs to not just the Palestinians that are residing currently in the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem, but it is to the millions of Palestinians that have been forcibly dispossessed and are waiting to return home. And so part of this attack on UNRWA, Israel thought that by defunding it would mean that the Palestinians would lose this right of return. And clearly we've seen funding being restored for many places in the world. Of course, the United States is still not going to engage in that refunding process. But at the same time, we see that funding has been restored in other spaces. And so again, going back to this, if we end the genocide as the first step, we can address some of these other issues that Israel is trying to attack in terms of the Palestinian right to life.
And again, the statistics are just incredible, right? So over 80% of all schools in Gaza have been damaged or destroyed. This includes the destruction, as you say, of all 12 of its universities. Most schools are out of operations, as well as study abroad scholarships and programs. More than 5,400 students, 261 teachers, over 100 professors killed, not to mention the many education workers and admin, and then, of course, the many thousands more who are injured on top of that. Mohamed, could you speak a bit more in terms of what happens when you destroy the intellectual centers and heritage of a people? What is this doing to the Palestinian people?
The destruction is quite significant. It is quite enormous. Often, as social scientists, we tend to think about it just in the sense of social sciences, and that's devastating enough, but it's not. We have to understand this is happening across all forms of knowledge. You have, for example, medical professionals who've spent 15, 20 years on top of their initial training to specialize in a particular area of medicine. Many of those have been killed in big numbers. So there are areas of medicine, for example, already where the number of years that it would take to retrain a new generation to take over those who have been deliberately assassinated, it's too long. It's not possible to do it within the next few years. Like, it's going to take 30, 40 years to retrain and to train people to get back to the level that the Palestinian medical field was at. Same in some of the other sciences where, you know, it takes years of collecting data to conduct your research, sometimes much longer than it does in the social sciences, right? So the setbacks are significant. The destruction is significant. It's going to take many years to rejuvenate. I have all the faith in the world in the Palestinian will and determination to rejuvenate all of these research projects and knowledge base and so on. But it's going to take many years, like I said, and it's going to take a lot of support. So we do need help from people across the world, from institutions across the world. It's important to emphasize that the Israeli genocide of the Palestinian people is not just being done by the Israelis. It's being done with the active participation of the Americans, of the Germans, and other Western European countries, of Canada. And just like it takes a big, large collective effort to destroy, it's going to take a big, large collective effort to rebuild. So I don't want to downplay the enormous challenges that lie ahead, but I do want people to know that the Palestinians need to take on the challenge. I hope that people are ready to step up and support that effort to rebuild. And the example that I've used before, and I'll use again here, to just let people wrap their head around it. During COVID, I know a lot of parents that sort of thought it was the end of their kids' future because they missed 2 months or so of schooling. Well, take that feeling and times it by 100, and you might get a glimpse of what it's like for Palestinian children right now, who not only have lost 2 months, they've lost the full year, but moreover, they've lost their schools. Their schools have been destroyed. The teachers have been killed. Their classmates have been killed. Their principals have been killed. So that should give people a glimpse of the challenges ahead and the amount of support that will be needed for Palestinians to rebuild. It's quite enormous. But of course, first step right now is to stop the genocide and end the siege on Gaza.
That was a small clip from the most recent episode of the Courage My Friends podcast. To listen to the full episode of Scholasticide and Solidarity, The Mind and Memory of Gaza, please tune in to Needs No Introduction. Needs No Introduction is available on Rabble.ca, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. The Courage My Friends podcast series is presented by Rabble.ca and the Tommy Douglas Institute with the support of the Douglas Coldwell Layton Foundation. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca. And thank you to Carl Nierenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.
Are you interested in learning more about sustainability or trying different plant-based foods at the largest plant-based event in North America? Come on down to the Vancouver Convention Center West Building between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. on June 1st and June 2nd to get free samples or hear leading voices in the plant-based movement speak on stage. Kids under 12 get a free pass. If you want to learn more, head over to www.plantedlife.com/plantedexpovancouver2024.